This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have... we have big events to talk about. There was a big event in sports that happened last Sunday, the kind of event that the whole world watches. But I want to talk about
except New Orleans. The whole world except New Orleans.
The whole world except Harry Connick Jr., which we know Harry Connick right. was not watching this event. But I want to personally invite Harry Connick Jr. to another event, Pipe, and it's an event that I hope equally that the whole world will be watching. And it's a little event called Live in Indy.
Ron's
gonna,
is almost Ron's as bad as our out. Efforts at Noah's event venue.
I know it. Mr. Branding Ron Martin is gonna be he's gonna be all over me in our corporate offices.
Right after he listens to the sports episode.
Right after he gets back from the road and listens to the sports app. By the way, where was he? Where is he this week?
He's in Chicago this week doing denominational cohorty things. I don't really know what a cohort is, but it's that.
It's a sojourn thing. It's what they used to call a meeting, and now they call it a cohort. So
yeah, or
cohort
like a colloquium
has,
or a there's yep. a summit. There's I mean there's it's all of the yeah. above, but it's denominational.
Dude, summit has political connotations. Okay. Cohort has hipster connotations. Colloquial has academic connotations. Okay. But yeah, definitely in the sojourn world, you're looking at like hipster meetings, really expensive food, overpaying for lodging, typical Chicago stuff. So he's loving it, man. I bet he's loving life.
Yeah, he seemed pretty upbeat on the episode we did. I mean, just very, he was invested and lively and, he was all in. Yeah. So, yeah.
Travel Ron is the best, Ron. You get him traveling and talking about some church business, he's good to go. But Piper, I want to talk about an event that's a lot like the Super Bowl. It's called Indy Live. It differs from the Super Bowl in that there's no football game happening. But there are
also, it
people
won't be boring.
It won't be boring. There will be people bloviating for several hours at a time, and those people are us. You, me, and one Ron Martin. So Indy Live is coming up at the end of March. Pipe, why don't you tell them where they can get tickets?
Yeah, if you go to happyrantpodcast.com, so that's just our landing page. You can also, it's where you can find all of our sponsors and our partners like Ligaris Roasters and everything. But right in the middle of that page, there is a big thing that says events. It's got all the details there. So it's March 31st from 7 to 10 p.m. at Soma Church in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's right on the eve of the Gospel Coalition Conference. So if you're thinking of coming to that, just bump your arrival up a little bit early and have way more fun than you will listening to sermons. And then you click on the big orange button that says get your tickets. And that's where you can get your tickets. And they're $15 a pop. So very affordable,
cheaper than a Super Bowl ticket by about $2,500.
That's right.
I think
a factor of 100. That's where you go to happyrantpodcast.com, hit the orange button that says order your tickets. And we'll do the usual thing where we do a couple live episodes that are sort of topically based. If you have topics you'd like us to discuss, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Send us suggestions. I compile those, and we in our lengthy show prep, which is the 17 minutes before the live event, we sort through those and go, that's a good one. And then we'll do a Q&A. So that's the most fun one, because that's when we get to interact with you. You get to try to stump us or trick us or make us laugh or kind of make a fool out of yourself. We occasionally have people who do that. So that's for our entertainment.
Absolutely.
And usually there's coffee and cake and all sorts of deliciousness. And all of that is built into the evening.
Piper, I can't wait to see what Soma Church and Day Spa looks like in Indianapolis. I feel like it's going to be the place where like we check in for our own event and they give us like a puffy white robe and slippers. And we're just sort of shuffling around going from one sort of pampering
station
to another.
Smells vaguely of eucalyptus.
Smells of eucalyptus and lime. Yeah, it's going to be
good. We had a listener who shared some pictures with us on Twitter of different things named Soma. And the ones I remember are like, environmentally friendly water bottles, and there was in fact a day spa. So
of course there was. I love it.
We know our branding, and so does that church.
We sure do. Now, what is Soma Hebrew for? Did we ever find out?
It's,
is it Hebrew for like the gathering?
It's for body. I think it's Greek.
Oh,
for body, which makes a ton of sense for a day spa, because there's a lot of body massages and body oiling and body waxing and tanning and mud masking and all sorts of things going on in there. So
it makes a ton of sense. They could really share that space with a day spa and keep the cost down for both entities. You know, church on Sunday, day spa.
Yeah, they could split the bill for the branding agency. It's genius.
I love it, man. I love it. The branding agency that we should start because of last week's episode where we had all those money business ideas.
That's right. All those pastors will owe us a fee of some kind when they get their businesses up and running. I have a question for you, Ted. Comparing Indy Live to the Super Bowl, are we better at our job than Tony Romo is at his? Which is saying something because he's maybe the best football commentator out there right now.
Dude, that's so
Are we better at podcasting than he is at commentating football games?
I'm not gonna lie, Piper. I think we're pretty good at podcasting. You know, I don't wanna blow my own shofar here, but I think we're pretty good at podcasting. Although Tony Romo is great at what he does. I got a text from my cousin during the Super Bowl, and this was the first Super Bowl in like a decade where I didn't have a house full of people. It was really, really nice. We didn't do anything, we didn't go anywhere, we didn't have a party. So I just sat and like texted my dad and my cousin through the whole thing, which was really fun. And at one point, like my cousin texts me and he's like, I want Tony Romo to be my best friend. You know, like I just want to hang out with Tony Romo. And I'm like, that would be great. You know, he seems really fun and insightful, and man, he's killing it right now. He's really killing it right now. And I think the question you ask yourself, if you're Tony Romo, and this does not apply to us, because I feel like we still got growing to do. You know, this podcast is going to be, you know, way more huge in 2 years than it is now. But with Romo, like, he's gotten so many things right so quickly right out the gate. Like, you ask yourself the question, where do I go from here? And if he starts getting things wrong, because Tony Romo's level of familiarity with the league and with play calling and with audibles and with all the stuff that he's crushing is never, it's never going to be as high as it is right now. In fact, with like, every day that he spends out of the league, it's going to get a little bit worse. The worry
kind,
if you're
kind of reminds me of someone named John Gruden, who spent a long time out of the league and then went in and tried to coach like it was 1998 again.
Oh man, if only it was 1998 again. I really wish it was, just for my own, you know, my own personal edification.
Yeah, you and Mike Allstott both.
Dude, seriously, me and Allstott and Gruden, we're going right to the top in 1998. I could be Allstott's backup. You know, I could be his understudy. I could wear number 40. I could wear the huge neck roll.
In 1998, you know, people had backup fullbacks. So, I mean, that...
Exactly.
No longer.
Yeah, you rolled like two or three deep in the fullback room in the 90s. But yeah, no longer. Much to the chagrin of John Gruden, Mike Allstott, and myself. But Piper, what were your thoughts on the Super Bowl in general? I know that the game itself has taken a lot of heat in the media for being boring. I can't really suss out whether I enjoyed it because I got to introvert during it, which is so rare, or whether it was actually fun. I think it was fun. Like, I love chess between Belichick and Wade Phillips. Like, that aspect of things was really interesting to me. The great defenses. I thought New England's offensive line did a phenomenal job. Offensive line and fullback. I think James Devlin was a big factor in the game, and I enjoyed watching him work. But I really enjoyed it. I sense that you did not. Lay some Super Bowl reactions on me.
Yeah, a defensive battle can be fun, but it has to be the right kind of defensive battle. This felt more like a mutual futility as opposed to, you know, think of like Steelers Ravens of the early 2000s. You know, those were defensive battles, but like every play was just, it was a collision of titans is kind of what it felt like. And this did not feel like that at all. This felt flat. You know, there was missed throws. And I mean, think about the play where Goff was way late getting the ball to Cooks at the back of the end zone. You know, and it was a great defensive play, but if he makes even a moderately decent throw, that he's open by 4 yards. And and it's an easy touchdown. And there was just a handful of plays like that. You're like, this could have been a good game if they just made plays. And that's not the defense doesn't get credit for the offense missing all the throws or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so it just felt flat. to me.
Yeah.
And so there, yes, there was tension because it was close, but like when it was 10-3 or whatever the final, what was it? 13-3. I don't even remember what the 13-3, final was. Yeah. But I mean, when it was 10-3 Patriots, like it felt like the game was over because yeah. it was just like, oh, the Rams offense is just abjectly broken. It's just totally garbage this game.
Dude. Yeah, it was. I felt like they crossed the 50 like one time. You know, I mean, it really
up until
like
the fourth quarter, there's a legitimate chance that the punters would be in consideration for MVP.
Absolutely.
You know, field position was the only thing that had gone right in that game. It was, you know, the well, that's not true. The national anthem performance was excellent as well. So,
dude, wasn't that great? That was really good after the kind of the bombs that were the AFC and NFC championship national anthems. Gladys Knight, man, tip of the cap to her. She's not a kid either.
No, she's been around a long time. Yeah, we looked it up at the with the friends I was watching with because my daughter asked me on the way to a Super Bowl party who's singing the national anthem, and I said Gladys Knight, and she goes, "Is she good?" Because she never heard of her, and I said, "Well, she used to be. Yeah. I don't know if she is anymore or not." Well, turns out she is, and you know, I had some troll on Twitter who was like, "It was pre-recorded." I was like, "Yeah, but it was her voice that was pre-recorded," which tells me that she can still, in fact, sing. I thought it was I thought it was classy and excellent, and she still got pipes.
Dude, it was classy and excellent. It was really phenomenally well done, and on the level of like pregame stuff. Since we're on that, like, what did you think of the NFL going kind of all in on Martin Luther King and all that stuff before the game? I mean, it was sort of ripped online because of the NFL and Kaepernick and some of that stuff. But, you know, they would have been ripped for not doing it, I think. And they got ripped for doing it. But I wondered what you thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL has put itself in a position where the only way that they cannot be ripped is sustained change over time. Any decision they make right now is the wrong one. You know,
because
my guess is if a team signed Kaepernick or if the league gave him a position as like ambassador for cultural change or something like that, they would be crushed, you know, because it, you know, it's too little too late kind of thing. So, but I mean, they made their bed. They have to sleep in it. They have mishandled just about every sensitive social issue for the last infinity years. So, I mean, what did they expect? I wish they had done a sort of, instead of kind of going all in, maybe just a more player-centric tribute to kind of why the players respect King. So put the, instead of sort of a, this is an NFL-sponsored thing, just because that feels really disingenuous to me.
Yeah, definitely. Dude, what if like, how bonkers would the internet have gone if they had like, if they had shown that little package and then like a puff of smoke goes up in the arena and Kaepernick walks out and they find some sort of way. I mean, it would take millions, I'm sure, but they find some sort of way to like make peace with Kaepernick and trot him out again. That would have been crazy.
I mean, my guess is they would have gotten accused of like paying for his silence at this point, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. There would have still been some way for them to screw that up.
You know what's, I had somebody, I read an article or a portion of an article that was talking about Kaepernick, and it basically said, you know, he's still the hinge on which this debate turns. The man doesn't say anything publicly. He's not stirring up controversy. He is, he genuinely is just sort of focused on community service things, you know, using the platform that he has because of football, the money he has because of football, and doing good work in his community. And but he's still the flashpoint for this, which is fascinating because he's not an NFL player anymore, and I doubt he ever will be.
Dude, right, and he's even way less like publicly angsty than Jim Brown. I mean, for example, you can always count on Jim Brown to like say at least one controversial thing every three months
or so. 25 current players, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's so many guys who are more outspoken about issues and I mean, currently. Now Kaepernick did, he was the starter of something, and so he took, you know, he was kind of the blunt end of the battering ram, so he took the most of the force. But there are so many guys who have said and done more. I mean, at this point, somewhere between 3 and 6 Patriots have said they're not going to the White House when they get invited.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all sorts of things. And yet he's still he's the guy.
Dude, yeah, he's not even doing like the college lecture circuit, is he? Which is where actual fame goes to die. I don't even get rumblings of anything like that.
No, I don't think he's doing anything public like that. I mean, he is not. I mean, that stuff would go viral if he did. And he's not saying anything about this. I don't even think he's doing interviews. Yeah.
No, I know. It's amazing, man. Pipe, let's talk about the presentation of the game entertainment-wise a little bit more. To me, and I probably paid more attention to the commercials this year than I have in a decade. To me, there was only one memorable commercial in that there's only one that I really remember, and it was the Stella Artois beer commercial with the dude. Jeff Bridges comes back, reprises his role as the dude. One of my favorite characters of all time. I mean, just an amazing, amazing character. And he comes in and instead of asking for the White Russian, he asks for, Estella. And that one I thought was really clever and really fun. Were there any commercials that stood out to you?
What was it? The NFL 100, with all of the different players tackling each other at an award ceremony or wedding reception or some whatever that was.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that because they pulled in so many great players from different eras in, you know, the recent NFL years, you know, Barry Sanders putting a spin move on people and Ed Reed sneaking out from behind a cake to just drop somebody and so forth. That was a fun one. Because it would have been kitschy if it stopped after like 2 or 3 players, but it was like 30 players showed up to tackle and throw and spin and hurdle and all in tuxedos. I thought that one was a lot of fun.
Dude, I feel like Ed Reed is still one of the coolest looking people like connected to the NFL.
Plus that is an all-time underrated football name too. Ed Reed.
Yeah.
I mean, if your name is Ed Reed, you're going to be a good athlete.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't matter what position you play. Any other commercials stand out to you, Pipe?
Man, not really.
Do you feel like the commercials were more like politically charged this year?
Oh,
I had people texting me, kind of complaining about how like, you know, Colbert turned the pistachio into a political thing, and I guess I'm so beaten down and bludgeoned by that whole motif anyway. Like I'm not sure I particularly noticed, but I wondered if that registered on your radar.
No, because it's just everything's a political statement now. I mean, Nike was a political statement and Gillette was a political statement. I mean, and both of those were like ad campaigns built around it. So, I mean, it's the least surprising thing in the world is that people used a Super Bowl ad to take political shots. There just weren't. There weren't a lot of memorable. It felt like people put less kind of production value into the commercials this year. They just sort of advertised stuff. There was less sort of big.
There was less
Bowl
of a feeling
commercial.
like ooh, this is a Super Bowl commercial, and more just this is another run of the mill commercial.
I feel like Amazon had one commercial that was like 7.5 minutes long, but I don't remember what it was for.
I don't either. Was it one of those like kind of touchy-feely, we're a part of everyone's lives kind of deals? Or?
I don't remember. I just remember the Amazon logo showing up over and over again. I mean, to be fair, during about half the commercial breaks, I was getting food and talking to people because I like people and food more than commercials. But But the ones that I did watch, the only one that really stood out to me, I mean, the one you mentioned because the dude is always peak favorite, but then the NFL Absolutely. One. Other than that, I don't recall any that made me kind of sit up and go, wow.
Yeah. Speaking of something that would not make you sit up and go, wow. Let's talk about the halftime show.
The
halftime show was pretty bad. I feel like Super Bowl halftime shows have become a self-parody. And this one didn't disappoint on that level. What were your responses to it?
Well, I will say this. I am thankful for Super Bowl halftime shows because they are my Twitter muse. I never have more fun than making fun of those things on Twitter. So thank you, Adam Levine, for being a cliche that is my Twitter muse. That was enjoyable.
Has Adam Levine shifted into like self-parody mode yet in his career. I feel like this is a thing that happens to certain pop stars where your personal odometer ticks over from like relevant star to self-parody. And I feel like we're really close to that with Adam.
See, Levine. I don't.
When the shirt came off, I feel like.
But here's the thing. Like, so I discovered something. When you make fun of these things on Twitter, you generally have a wave of support as people love the jokes and snark lives and, you know, sarcasm is fed and forwarded, et cetera. When you make fun of it on Facebook, all of the like 28 to 45 year old moms. Like they get offended because Adam Levine is secretly the love of their lives, apparently. So,
dude, my perception of Facebook is that it's like if it was a place in a city, it would be a dark alley, but instead of like young like thugs in the dark alley, it would be moms like with broken bottles and like swinging chains and like you wander into the Facebook dark alley, man. You're getting cut. You know, somebody's going to cut you.
Yeah, it's like an unlit cul-de-sac. So, like, during parts of the day, it's very sort of serene and, like, very normal, Pleasantville. But then when the sun goes down, it gets very dark and you don't really know what's going on in this crazy town. He's not a parody of himself to the audience he's trying to reach, which is, like, white women.
Moms who take him seriously. Yeah, white middle-aged women who really, really love Adam Levine. And to be fair to them, man, who can blame him? You know, Adam Levine's nice to look at. You know, he still takes care of his body, as we all found out on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yep. I mean, that was a good commercial for whoever his personal trainer is.
Oh, most definitely. Like, Stephen Furtick supplements, maybe. He's hitting those Furtick supplements. Right. But yeah, I mean, you know, what's not for a middle-aged, you know, white mom to like in terms of Adam Levine? He writes these kind of like accessible, never offensive love songs. You know, he's great. Now, my moment of disappointment was I love the song Sicko Mode by Travis Scott. It's one of my favorites. And they let him go like 15 seconds into that thing. And then immediately somebody else came out and Travis Scott's night was over. I feel like it was a tease. It was almost like Todd Gurley. He was the Todd Gurley of the halftime show. And he got in. He got to like explode for one 16-yard carry.
The most talented performer who got two carries.
Yeah, the most talented performer. Like clearly the best person on the lineup. He gets two carries. Adam Levine gets like 30 carries. And the other guy, I don't know, got like 10. But who was the other guy? I'm blanking.
This big boy was out there at one point. Was Andre? Did Andre 3000 make an appearance? I can't remember.
I don't think so. I feel like I would remember that.
Yeah, and somebody mentioned him to me, but I was like, man, I must have missed that part when I was tweeting or something. But because I feel like I would have noticed him.
Dude, you know what always fascinates me about the Super Bowl halftime show is the cadre of people that they get to run out onto the field and be like falsely enthusiastic.
Yes,
you know what I mean. I really wonder. Like, I would love to write a short story about that person, you know, or that group of people, how they find them, if they repeat year after year, if there's like a Hollywood agency for just like on field, like fist pumping, fakely enthusiastic people.
Right.
That to me is a real interesting thing. And I wonder if we should like paper the house at Indy Live. I almost said Live in Indy again, man. Ron's going to, he's really going to try to fire me from the show because he's so into the branding. Like, He really feels like Indy Live is an important distinction. I wonder if he sees it going on a t-shirt at some level. But I don't know. I wouldn't.
I haven't had those business discussions. So if he sees it going on a t-shirt, he's going to have to facilitate that one himself.
Dude, right. That's going to have to run through us as a company. You know, we don't want any rogue t-shirt business happening. But I don't know, Pipe. What other thoughts on the Super Bowl do you have? Have you heard anything about Todd Gurley? Like, why we didn't see more of the Rams' best player? Is this an example of Sean McVay being too smart by half, like too clever for his own good?
Well, it wasn't the first time it's happened because Gurley kind of disappeared the last two or three games, and they kept denying that he was injured. And if he's not injured, then Sean McVay is a lot less smart than everybody thinks. If he is injured, just say he's injured. Now, I realize they're probably like, we don't want to make excuses. It's not excuses to put somebody on an injury list. Like, he's got a bad hamstring, you know?
Yeah.
So it was definitely weird because the Patriots don't have explosive linebackers in terms of like speed. And so they did, you know, using Gurley in the passing game seems like it could have been beneficial to them and they didn't. He's also just a really good runner and he didn't get very many carries. It was like 6 or 8 or something like that. I mean, and when he ran, he looked pretty decent.
He did.
So yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. My only other real takeaway was that all of the teams that have hired, you know, Sean McVay's third cousins as their coaches, because, you know, he knew Sean McVay. They played together in high school. They're Facebook friends, whatever it is. I wonder how nervous all of those teams are, because it seems to me that over the last quarter of the season, defenses seems to have caught up to the genius of Sean McVay.
Yeah, I know it, man. I know it. Yeah, that team looked really just really stoppable. You know, they looked ordinary. They looked unremarkable over the last quarter of the season. And I think Sunday's game really exposed how average their offensive line was. You know, that game, if you just look at the two offensive lines, New England's did a great job. They neutralized Sue and Donald. They were doing this kind of unique thing in the run game where they would ISO, but they would ISO on Donald instead of on a linebacker. So typically when you run an ISO, you get a fullback on a backer, but they were letting the guard kind of leak out and take care of the backer and then hitting Donald with Devlin, and it was really effective. Yeah, it was weird for New England, even though, because they started out running the ball really well. Then they like didn't run for 2.5 quarters. And then they closed out the game with it. So Sony Michel, Rex Burkhead, those guys had a nice, you know, a nice performance there to close the game out. But they seemed to go away from it for a while. And they seemed to just run the same sort of whip route to Julian Edelman, you know, which worked. But yeah, even Brady wasn't super sharp.
Yeah, I do think, though, that it is amazing how in the last couple games, the corpse of Rob Gronkowski has made massive catches. In both the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, a guy who just was, he had the worst season of his career, I think, just in terms of, he was on the field and did nothing. And everybody was like, oh, he's slow, he can't run. I mean, he even looked slow in this game, and yet somehow.
He really did, yeah.
You know, Brady drops it in there, and he, you know, pulls it in between two defenders and sets him up for a touchdown.
Absolutely.
And then I know everybody hates Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
That hatred is pure jealousy. Because he is the best NFL coach probably ever.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's the best.
Bill Walsh is up there, but both of them did the same thing in that they changed how game plans work.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And they did it in pretty similar ways. You know, Walsh developing the West Coast offense was really in response to, you know, Buddy Ryan's 46 defense and a lot of these, like, you know, attacking kind of blitz everybody fronts that he was seeing in the early and mid 80s. And, you know, Belichick, I think, taking that a step forward, like, he just adjusts to everything, but he does it so organically and on the fly that you almost don't even notice. You know, he adjusts from quarter to quarter, from play to play. And he just does it so well. And he's done it so many times with so many different types of players. You know, you kind of had the, like, five wides era of Brady over the last couple of years. You know, going way back, you had the, you know, ground and pound kind of Corey Dillon Patriots years. I mean, they've done it so many times with so many different players. And I was actually having this conversation with my dad. The life cycle of Brady, like, when he was first with the Pats, they had a tight end named Christian Fourier, who was at the end of his career, you know, like late career Christian Fourier. His nephew, Joseph Fourier, has already, like, come and gone from the league, and Brady's still playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible that he could be, like, almost playing with, like, the sons of guys that he came into the league with 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was a freshman in college when they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl in 2001. I guess it would have been 2002, but the 2001 season. And, you know, so they beat the greatest show on turf, and he was a second year quarterback at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was a team that was just like, they were, they were undermanned, they were under-talented, and yep. just sort of scrappy. They weren't supposed to win. And then what is it now? 19 years later, 17 years later, they're a full-on dynasty. And
yeah,
people hate them and hate that they're winning. I tell NFL fans this. People will not love the league more when Brady and Belichick are gone. It will not be a better league when they're gone.
I think the league will be actually way less fun when they're gone. And I was going to ask you, do you think Gronk is the last fun NFL player? Like the last guy that's really fun, that really seems to, you know, enjoy it, have a good time off the field. I've loved Gronk. I've loved watching him, and he's had a super fun career.
Well, at the risk of being controversial, there are other players who are fun. They just get judged mm-hmm. because they're young black men. Like
who? Who's fun? Who's fun in the same way as Gronk?
Well, I think he and Odell Beckham are basically the same person in terms of partying. It's just that Beckham gets trashed for going and partying before games, and people are like, Gronk gonna Gronk. And
yeah,
you know,
how does Gronk get away with like the lovable goofball sort of approach to that?
Because he's a big white lug who's named Gronkowski. You know, if his name was like Jamal Smith, people would crap all over him.
That's true, man. That's interesting.
I mean, nothing sounds like the sort of old school hard nosed football player like Gronkowski. Like that's the middle linebacker for the 1974 Steelers.
Dude, you know what? Let me posit a theory in support of what you just said. There was a black version of Gronkowski, and people did crap all over him. And his name was Martellus Bennett. He was fun. He was goofy. He said crazy things. He was a super talented, you know, generationally athletic tight end, and you're right, people crapped all over him. So yeah, you're on to something.
Gronkowski is the quintessential boys will be boys behavior. You know, when he hangs out with 40 strippers on a yacht, people are jealous of him. When another player does it who has a little bit more melanin, that player is not preparing for games. That player is, you know, a pox on society. And it's a real double standard. So there's a lot of players in the league who I think love their lives and have a lot of fun and party and don't do anything criminal. They're just partiers, and they get dumped on.
Here's an interesting life cycle thing for Gronk though. So let's say he retires. He will become like incrementally less charming the more time he spends away from the game, or he'll be perceived as less charming. What's the over under on amount of time between Gronk's retirement and the time where he does something really embarrassing publicly and it's no longer charming, it's like sad and people turn on him? 6 months, a year? I don't think it'll be very long.
I mean, or does he just go like run a chain of shoe stores? Like he's gonna.
That would be awesome, actually. You know, would be so awesome.
Couldn't you see that though? It's like a region. Where is he from originally? I know he went to college in Arizona, but
I have no idea. I feel like the Northeast.
Yeah,
somewhere,
he's gonna go.
I could be wrong.
He's gonna go like run. He's either going to become just the worst caricature of himself without any of the sort of NFL cachet, or he's going to go be like just a successful businessman.
I hope he does the latter. I would love to see Gronk as a successful businessman. Speaking of Pipe, this is a slight topic change, but it's in the same wheelhouse of like outlandish over the top superstars that we have some familiarity with. Did you see the new 30 for 30 on Deion Sanders?
I have not yet. No,
it's pretty fascinating. And to me, it's fascinating on the level of, like, this guy hasn't learned anything. Like, this guy has not, this guy hasn't grown one iota as a person. And I caveat that by saying maybe he has. And also there's been all the rumblings of like, you know, Deion Sanders had a, you know, an experience with faith and, you know, maybe he had a conversion. I don't know. Like I'm not speaking into the ins and outs of that at all. I'm just saying, for a guy who had a reputation of being like shallow and arrogant and aggravating as a 25-year-old.
Oh, you mean like Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, exactly. Except that
Gronk is fun for all the same reasons that Dion was a tool.
Ah, Pipe, you're going like full on political on this. This is fascinating.
I just
am I allowed to acknowledge that Dion is still a tool though?
Because
yes, he totally is.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Gronk totally is a tool too. I don't know why people think he's fun. Like he's
why is that? What is the difference? Let's suss it out. Because I feel like there's got to be something here, you know? And it's got to be more than race.
It's hard to see what the difference would be. So let's take Dion for example. Now, Dion was more outspokenly arrogant than
he was, and he had
maybe
the whole thing
any
where,
NFL
like,
player this side of Terrell Owens, but
he had the whole thing where he got on the wrong side of the media too by like throwing all that ice water on Tim McCarver after the World Series.
Because McCarver had been want to throw things on Tim McCarver.
That's true. I don't know, but there was a little chip. There was a little sense of like, you know, Dion against people in the media that I think Gronk has lacked. Gronk has, I don't know how he's done it, but he's become like a media darling. You know, probably because he parties with these guys and he makes them feel like the cool people that they never were in real life.
Yeah, I mean, he's
maybe that's the difference.
Yes, I mean, there is a like Gronk is different in the like in a media scrum or a press conference. You know, he's funny, he's warm. I wouldn't say he's witty because I don't think he's that bright. But he's
not witty, but you know what Gronk is? Gronk is the, like, he's the alpha male stud in high school who's nice to the dorks. And I think every dork, which is almost every, like, media member,
yeah, because they write about sports because they couldn't play. That's right.
Dude, right. But they feel exponentially cooler by being in the same room as Gronk. And I don't think Dion had that same, he didn't have that same magnetism. Like, he wanted to. You know, he walked around like he had the magnetism in terms of, you know, the jewelry and the sunglasses and taking limos everywhere and doing all the Dion
and
stuff.
Like the neon Dion thing. I mean, he did the sort of thing like what Kobe did, where Kobe gave himself a nickname, you know, where he's like, I'm the Black Mamba.
It's
like,
the George Costanza thing. You can't do it. You can't nickname yourself. Now let's go kind of point by point through the ridiculous celebrity life cycle. Did Gronk, and I'm asking because I don't know, Did Gronk ever cut a ridiculous rap video? Because Deion Sanders did it at least a couple times.
I don't think so. Although there have been, I mean, I bet he's cut 25 like karaoke videos.
That's true. There have been lots of like self-referential Gronk things that may be like the, you know, the 2010s analog to cutting a ridiculous rap video. So I mean, we can call that a push. Like, they've both done it.
No, I think Dion's is worse because when you cut an album, like, you're saying, like, I want this with RCA Records. I think I'm a legitimate artist. Whereas Gronk is...
Dude, right.
It's the scene of more like being a party animal or whatever, which is, it's a different kind of thing. And it's a little bit more self-deprecating.
So when you're Dion cutting the rap record, you're booking studio time. Like, you're surrounding yourself with a certain number of people who are going to say, yeah, that was pretty good. You know, that was a good take. Let's go with that one. And that is kind of exponentially sadder. Let's see what else. Dion. I mean, he played two sports. Gronk didn't do that. So, I mean, he's definitely got Gronk beat there. What about like ridiculous pop culture cameos? I feel like Gronk is the king of like popping up certain places. He may have Dion beat there.
I'm trying to think.
I don't know.
I can't think of. I mean, I don't watch a ton of like, you know, network, you know, sitcoms and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know that Gronk has made a ton of appearances on those. I feel like he's different than Dion in that Dion was trying to be a brand. Gronk is trying to have fun.
Yeah.
And that is a distinct difference between some of these players who are perceived as sort of D-bags and those.
Dude, it
and
is.
Then, and like, Gronk.
I mean, all race issues aside, I think people tend to like people who are having fun. And I'll give you somewhat of an analog to Gronk from my childhood. Walter Payton, you know, different than Gronk. Obviously, like, partying wasn't a part of Payton's public persona, at least. But, like, he was perceived as a guy who was always having a good time. And I think everybody liked him. Like, Black people loved Payton. White people loved Payton. I loved him. You know, but he looked like he was always having a good time, albeit a little bit differently than Gronk. But I think the the sentiment was the same in terms of like audiences connecting with a person. Is there an NBA analog to Gronkowski, black or white?
I'm trying to think. The NBA is so different than the NFL because the players are brands. Do they just like they? Yeah. They if you are a star, you are a brand. Just because it's a, yeah. it's such a different like it's an up close league. It's a, it's, you know, in the NFL, the thing that happens on the field is not a personal thing. It's a bunch of guys wrapped in armor with numbers on.
Dude, right? You can't see their faces, even though they have shoe deals and stuff. Like, there's no. There's no sort of iconic transcending the game superstars in the NFL except maybe Brady. Now, speaking of,
I think
in the NBA,
Klay Thompson has had his Gronkish moments, but he's so much more like nerdy and subdued. You know, whereas Gronk is a larger than life personality who just, you know, all I want to do is have some fun. But Klay Thompson, dude, he does like that. You know, he shows up at like clubs and in Shanghai and dances badly to music and stuff like that. So it gets a little crazy.
Exactly. But it is winsome in a similar way. Speaking of like superstars transcending the game, NBA wise, how do we feel about LeBron so sort of boldly and nakedly just running the Lakers at this point? And my follow up question to that for you as an NBA fan is, do you think LeBron runs the risk of like overdoing it here in a way that will truly taint like how people see him? Do you think there could be a big title shift against LeBron, provided he keeps like trying to get Luke Walton fired and, you know, trying to do all these trades? Do you think he could overdo it is my question.
Could he? Yes, but he won't because he's incredibly savvy. So he's the kind of like mob boss who he's responsible for all the crimes. And there's no proof, you know, like Al Capone got put away for tax evasion, not for any of the things that were egregious crimes.
Sure.
He's got that kind of thing going on where, you know, people say LeBron is trying to get Walton fired. There's no proof of that. There's no comments. Yeah. There's no interviews. There's not a confrontation between him and Walton. There's like a subtle behind the scenes thing. So could he go too far? Yeah, but he did the same thing in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically built the team that he wanted there, which, you know, made finals appearances and won a finals, but wasn't, you know, didn't sustain very well. But I think his legacy is pretty well cemented. I was just looking at some stats the other day. Like he's 3 to 4 more good seasons away from being the all-time leading scorer in the league. I think he's just a few hundred points from being in the top maybe four. He's plus, I mean, he's just a metronome of excellence. And his legacy is going to be pretty well cemented, even if he never wins another title. Well, there will always be the Jordan-LeBron debate.
Sure.
Because Jordan won 6 and LeBron just won't. He's not going to win 6.
Yeah.
But if he sneaks in one more title, which at this point I would bet against, but it's possible.
Sure.
I don't think he's going to ruin his legacy. I mean, shoot, if Michael Jordan didn't ruin his legacy by going to the Wizards and then buying a team and owning it badly, like Jordan's legacy as a player is Jordan's legacy as a player. And it's like the stuff that happened at the end of his career and then in the front office never happened.
Dude, that stuff is almost remembered wistfully. By me, at least, and I think by others with Jordan. Like we remember that Wizards era as, like, you know, a thing that happened that, you know, I look at it as, you know, he was clearly old and he had changed his game and he wanted a new challenge. And I always give him the benefit of the doubt, though, when I probably shouldn't. But, yeah, when I look at LeBron right now, I almost see, in keeping with the gangster movie, like, ethos, it's almost like the second half of Goodfellas to me. Like, it's the beginning of the second half of Goodfellas, where Henry Hill kind of, like, goes, like, he goes over the cliff a little bit, you know? And the kind of stuff that he could control in the first half of Goodfellas, it starts to catch up with him. And there's a little bit of that motif for me right now with LeBron, where I go, man, I wonder, like, he's got to play this Lakers thing right. You know, this thing could explode in his face somehow. But it'll be interesting.
Do we really think he's controlling, he's controlling Magic Johnson? Because Magic is their GM, and like I just, if anybody can match LeBron for both magnetism and ego, it's Magic.
Yeah.
And it's right. hard to see him sort of manipulating Magic. I think if anything ruins the Lakers, it's Magic. I don't have any confidence at all that he's good in the front office. He just smiles real big, and he used to be.
Dude,
he used to be
an
elite
player. I mean, if Magic and LeBron were in the same room and they were both talking, who would you listen to? You would listen to LeBron, and so would I. So there's that, but there's also this weird dynamic in the NBA where, like, your highest paid player is far and away like the highest paid person in the organization,
right?
You know what I mean? So there is this weird skewing of the power dynamic where, I think in any walk of life or in any group of people, you're always kind of going to listen to the person that makes the most money, you know, right or wrong, good or bad. And, you know, LeBron is that person. And yeah, I don't know. You know, I think maybe people like me like to think of him wielding a lot more power behind the scenes just because it makes it more interesting. And I do wonder if at some level, if you're LeBron James, are you bored of just playing basketball? You know, I might be bored of it. I mean, he's done it at such a dominating level for so long, and he's done it his whole life. Like, maybe this is just the fruit of boredom at some level. I don't know. We're just speculating at this
point. Yeah, we are. I think being in Los Angeles is a different thing too. You know, him wielding power in Cleveland, where he, you know, he's the biggest star in Ohio history.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I can't think of anybody who's even remotely close.
Yeah, I can't either.
And
no,
you know, even at the heyday of like Jim Brown and you right. know, various different teams that Cleveland has had along the way. I mean, LeBron is the greatest star to come out of Ohio.
Dude, yeah, maybe Pete Rose gets close. I don't know, Johnny Bench. We're going way back.
Yeah, I mean, that is not to insult other great players who have played for any Cincinnati team, any Cleveland team,
right,
et cetera. It's just he's LeBron, and
yeah,
that's not true in LA.
Like, yeah, that's true.
I think we would all critically say he's the best basketball player. But I mean, when you have a history of Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson and Elgin Baylor and Jerry West, not to mention like James Worthy. And I mean, those are all Hall of Famers, and I'm sure I missed two or three as well. You're just another star.
Yeah.
Nobody in LA is intimidated by LeBron the same way that they are in other places.
Yeah.
And I think that takes away some of his abilities to sort of influence and to foul things up.
Yeah. No, you're right, man. You're absolutely right. Piper, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I want to get to our book recommendations. But do you have any responses to NBA trade deadline things?
Well, at the time of recording this, the deadline is tomorrow, so all craziness could happen between now and then. So as of right now, the two trades that we know about that are kind of a big deal are the Porzingis one to Dallas and the Tobias Harris one to Philly.
Dude, Porzingis makes Dallas so fun.
Yes. That one, I mean, James Dolan is the worst owner in the NBA. He runs the most dysfunctional franchise that makes repeatedly the dumbest decisions. I feel terrible for Knicks fans. I never thought I'd feel real bad for a New Yorker about sports. But but Knicks fans, good Lord, I feel your pain. That is awful.
That is so awful.
And you know,
what a shame.
Now here's the thing. I'd put like a 10% chance on this. If they get Kevin Durant and another super duper star like Kyrie Irving or somebody this summer,
yeah,
that trade is fine because they cleared the space to get that, and that like the Garden will blow up. If that happens, here's the thing. It's not going to happen. They're going to sign like Tobias Harris and I don't know, Paul Millsap or something.
They're going to get some second tier guys.
Dallas with Porzingis and Luka Doncic is, man, that's going to be fun. I hope Porzingis can stay healthy, but that duo is going to be so much fun. And Dallas, because those guys, because Doncic is still on a rookie contract, they have some room to go out and get some other players too. So,
dude, question in NBA question, is that the greatest white guy pairing of all time?
Are we looking at the two greatest? Bird and McHale might have something to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, Bird and anybody, but like, yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, let's say like post Bird, so like post 1992. Let me think. Other white guy pairings. Stockton Hornacek.
Yeah, it's pretty strong, man. Yeah, pretty strong.
I mean, obviously, there's more of a career arc there. Did Steve Nash play with any? Oh, Steven. No, Nash and Dirk is probably
Nash and Dirk. Yeah, yeah.
But now
right.
that was short lived because Nash went to Phoenix. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Did Mark Price play with any good white dudes?
I don't know.
Craig Elo.
Mark Price and Craig Elo. That's a good white dude pairing.
Yeah. I mean, on the scale of white dudes, that's good.
I know.
I think it has the, if Nash and Dirk had stayed together, they would have been the best. I think this is what Dallas should have had with Nash and Dirk. Because I would imagine both these guys are going to be around for a while. Crossing fingers that Porzingis stays healthy. Because he's so much fun. And I think he will be way better playing next to somebody like Luka, who is so creative and can set other people up so well.
Yeah, most definitely, man. Most definitely. That'll be interesting. Piper, did I talk about Mike Conley on the last show? I don't want to repeat myself.
We did. You talked about your deep and abiding affection for him. I think we talked a little bit about prospective trades. I would love to see him. You know where I want to see him end up?
Where?
Detroit.
Ooh, that would be interesting. I
mean, it would be great to see him end up in like New York or somewhere that he could really be platformed. Yeah. But like putting him in the Eastern Conference, putting him with Blake on a fringe playoff team.
That'd be fun, man.
Because Blake is playing really well this year in the obscurity of Detroit. And I think if you put Conley with him, they both will benefit from that. And they have some other, they have some moderately decent young players around them. They're not great, but they have some talent. And Reggie Jackson, who's their current point guard, is terrible. So it would be a huge upgrade for them.
No, it would, man. It totally would. And they've got a new arena there. And yeah, there's some, there's some excitement. So.
And Detroit fans I think they really want to root for that team. I mean, you remember?
They do.
Now, maybe when they, how far... Their new stadium's near the old one, right? Their new arena? Or is it downtown now?
I think it's right downtown,
Okay, so maybe that kills it. Because I know when they used to be at, what was it, the Palace of Auburn Hills.
The Palace of Auburn Hills,
They drew
Hills. Yeah,
really
covered
well.
A bunch of games.
They had raucous crowds. No, that was the Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace days. But
dude,
they have
this,
a history
though,
of good fandom.
About Detroit fans in general, they are the best fans. Like, even when their teams are sucking for really long stretches of time, they are, like, loud, passionate, loyal fans. And they deserve a good product, which is what made those early 2000s Pistons teams so fun. It's like, finally, Detroit has a product worth cheering about, And they'd had one with the Bad Boys Pistons, too, were really fun. But, the Lions had been mired in losing for so long and still are. And, the Tigers had their troubles, but yeah, great fan base. That would be a fun Conley destination for sure. I would like to see it. Piper, we've got time for a quick book recommendation. What are you reading right now, sports-wise, that you'd like to talk about?
So I just finished a book. I don't think I recommended it on this podcast, so I'm just going to go with it as if I did not. It is called Boomtown.
Oh yeah,
by
actually.
Did I recommend it?
You totally talked about it last time.
Crap.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's okay,
it's still
man.
Excellent.
That's okay.
Let me think. Let me think. What else am I? I've talked about basketball and other things by Shea Serrano, I think. I'm kind of in a drought between sports books right now because I've had to read a bunch of other crap for work and stuff. So,
dude, no worries. You don't have to have one.
Yeah, I feel obliged to have one. Sorry, I'm looking at my shelf right now.
Yeah. Dude, so mine while you're looking. I'm reading a book by Rick Ankiel. Remember Rick Ankiel,
yes.
The old Cardinals pitcher?
Yeah.
It's called The Phenomenon, and it's about him like getting the yips and basically forgetting how to throw the ball. And it was an anxiety thing, and it's deeper than forgetting how to throw the ball. It's just sort of this comprehensive thing that happens to certain athletes. And I gravitated toward it because I think I had the same thing for a period of time as a long snapper. Anything that's like fine motor like that, where you're doing the same motion over and over again, like the best headspace to be in is to just not think about it.
It's to not be in a headspace at all. Yeah.
To not be in a headspace at all. And the book is fascinating because, if you're the kind of person who gets in a headspace, which thoughtful people generally are, you know, that's exactly what happened to Ann Keel. And he started like overthinking everything as far as, you know, his throwing motion, his life, walking out to the mounds, you know, just all these things. It's really fascinating. But from a writing business standpoint, Piper, the other thing that's kind of low key fascinating about the book is it was so clearly written by the ghostwriter. There's like no trace of Ann Keel in it anywhere except the story. And it's like, being that I have ghostwritten several times, like I can see all the tricks, and I can see all the ghostwriter's tricks, and I can see that like he really had to do a lot. So tip of the hat to the ghostwriter on Rick Ann Keel's book, The Phenomenon. It really is a fascinating topic, and it's one that I would love to read more about even after I finished the book.
He was such a sad story too, because when he came in as a pitcher, he was a lefty who threw mid-90s and had a curveball, like the curveball from hell, you know, just I think he had like 190 strikeouts as a rookie or something. He's borderline rookie of the year, just phenomenal pitcher. And then like in year two or three, it just fell apart. And then amazingly also, he came back he made the major leagues later as an outfielder in like his mid-30s. So he went away for several years and then came back maybe early 30s, mid-30s as an outfielder who was a moderately good hitter, really good fielder, and of course had just a cannon for an arm. And
dude, right. It just speaks to the athleticism of the guy that he could
be. And the persistence and the resilience. Yeah. Because when he came back, you knew that everybody's going to be like, oh, this is Rick Ann Keel, the former league grade pitcher who was an absolute failure and is now a fourth outfielder.
Dude, right. But it took a huge amount of stones for him to just come back and try to do that, much less be successful at it. And one of the interesting things about the book, too, you know, reading it as a believer, it's totally a secular approach to like, how do you defeat a problem? Like how do you overcome something that's difficult for you in your head?
Yeah.
You know? And you know, man, reading it as a Christian, you know, our minds immediately go to like, gosh, we've got prayer, we've got scripture, we've got the body of Christ, and we've got sharing the burden with people.
Identity not wrapped up in a curveball.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Which is a hard thing to do, man.
Yeah.
I mean, even for us as believers, it's so hard for us not to wrap our identities up in, you know, what we produce. But yeah, really interesting read, The Phenomenon. Do you have a quick one, Pat?
I do. I might have recommended this one in one of our very first sports eps, but you know, so it'll be a throwback for those. It's called Tip Off by Philip Bondi. That's Philip with an F, F-I-L-I-P, Philip Bondi, How the 1984 NBA Draft Changed Basketball Forever. So that was
I still have to read that.
Oh, you'll love it. So, you know, it was the Michael Jordan draft. Yeah. And so it's all about the inner workings and the trades that did happen, almost happened, didn't happen, kind of looks at the hypotheticals of what if Jordan had ended up, you know, not going number three overall? You know, I think Sam Bowie went first that year.
That's right.
And I think Hakeem went two and Jordan went three. So there was because that's right. Hakeem went two because I think Houston might have already had Portland drafted Bowie because I think they already had Drexler, I think is how it went. But and so there's just all of these sort of the behind the scenes machinations of all this and who hated who and who wouldn't make deals with who. It's a really engaging read. Charles Barkley makes an appearance because I think he was drafted maybe 12th or 13th that year. And he's just sort of like the weird oddball character. He's like this short, fat power forward from Auburn who nobody knows what to do with. And then, of course, ends up being, you know, one of the top two or three guys from that draft. But it's fascinating for people who grew up loving the NBA through the 80s and the 90s and sort of those just so many Hall of Fame players in it. So, yeah, it's called Tip Off by Philip Bondi. It's a super fun read. It's a quick one, but really enjoyable.
I just bought it while you were speaking. So that's the magic of technology in my studio. So that book will be on my doorstep soon. Piper, this has been enjoyable as always, man. It's fun to unpack these sports things with you. Soon we will be chopping it up together at Indy Live. So if you haven't done so already, visit happyrantpodcast.com. Secure your tickets for Indy Live. And until next time, Rick Ann Keel.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey, Ted, what do you want to do today?
Well, Ashley, I've always got work to do, naps to take, but I have a better idea. How about we invite everyone to listen to the Team Us podcast?
I love that idea. Let's do it right now. Hi, everyone. We're Ted and Ashley Slater, and we'd love for you to join us as we talk about teamwork in marriage.
We share how grace, commitment, and cooperation can help couples live the everyday moments of marriage together.
To listen, go to lifeaudio.com and search for Team Us.